From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of The Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Today I've got a great show for you. My guest is Art Olivier. He's back on the show. He's the producer of Operation Terror, one of the best movies I've seen on 9/11. And he's got a whole lot of new information today. So let me say good morning to Art. Good morning, Art.
Oh, good morning, Maria.
How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Good. You know, yesterday I talk about your film often. And yesterday when they're talking about this Malaysian flight and one of the supposed rebels said that the bodies on the plane were old and drained of blood, and then, you know, Russian newspapers reporting that they all had brand new passports, which of course we don't know whether it's true or not, but the first thing I thought of was Operation Terror, and I don't like to spoil the ending for people that haven't seen it. But, you know, that often asked question on 9/11, what happened to the bodies if the story of the plane crashes were true?
Right, yeah. And, that really raised a red flag, you know, that the bodies were already decomposed as they fell out of the sky. So, I think that happens a lot in a lot of these false flag activities where people are killed prior to the airplane crash, where they're supposedly killed.
Uh-huh.
It gives a good cover story. I mean, it was like the when they killed the half of the Polish government, the people that did not support having closer ties with the European Union and didn't support getting into the loans from the World Bank. All those people ended up dead, and the story was that they crashed an airplane inside of Russia.
Oh.
I think that's quite often. You know, people will be killed, and then they'll have an airplane crash to write it in the story about how they were killed.
Well, I'm sure you've been following the story, and if you see the photographs coming out of the Ukraine, there's quite a bit of evidence that a plane crashed, something we did not see on 9/11, not at the Pentagon, not at Shanksville. And as far as Ground Zero, I mean, they got rid of the evidence as soon as they could, either shipping it to a landfill in Staten Island or shipping it all off to China.
Right, they got rid of the evidence really fast. And that is a big difference, you know, that you actually have airplane parts in an airplane crash site. And when, like in Shanksville, you just have a hole in the ground.
Exactly. Plus, they even found the black boxes, like, immediately. We still haven't heard the black boxes from 9/11, and how many years has it been?
And not only that, there are only four plane crashes in modern aviation history in the United States where they did not find the serial numbered parts of the airplane. Every airplane, you have these parts that they have serial numbers on them, and they're what they're called time change parts, because in an airplane, after it flies so many hours, you have to replace certain parts because they could start fatiguing. And the four flights on 9/11, they didn't find a single time change serial numbered part.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Jim Fetzer, who's a regular on my show, said a lot of the plane numbers on 9/11 were still flying. They weren't decommissioned until maybe 2006.
Yeah, two of them. I think it was, from one of the airlines. They were not decommissioned until quite a bit later.
Right. So, I mean, you know, how can we, you know, I watch Obama making all these demands of Russia for, you know, evidence. Nobody mess up the crime scene. Nobody mess around with the crash scene. And I think to myself, what hypocrisy, because reporters weren't even allowed near the sites on 9/11, except unless they were embedded reporters or in-bed reporters. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, but some of them did get close. You know, it's like the Fox photographer from the local Pittsburgh affiliate got to the site at Shanksville. But then he had to report, you know, what you see. Do you see any large debris in the airplane sections, tail sections, bodies? He says, no, there was nothing. There was nothing there but a hole in the ground.
Right, right. And, I mean, even the trees didn't burn up that were nearby where, you know, there's constantly pictures of trees burnt on small plane crashes every time you see them.
Well, there were some trees that did burn because it what appears to be in Shanksville is that there was an existing ravine there that was shown in photographs before 9/11, and there was a missile that was fired in the middle of the ravine to simulate a fuselage going through, and the burn off from the missile all went in one direction, and it did burn some trees. But it did not burn some of the weeds that were in that ravine, which is supposed to simulate the wings going through the ground. Because mm-hmm. the official story is that the plane crashed at that spot, and it completely buried itself under the ground. That's why you can't see any of the debris, which, of course, is totally absurd.
Right. Which, of course, is totally ridiculous, unless you believe the story of Jonah's whale. What I mean... So I know you've been really busy. You've been to Iran. I think you're working on a movie about Rachel Corrie. I don't know where to start with you first. And then, of course, we want to talk about the ley line discoveries that you've been making.
Uh-huh.
So what were you doing in Iran? Let's start with that.
Well, I was there. I was invited by the Resistance Film Festival. And it looks like I may be going back in September also. They're going to accept Operation Terror in their film festival.
Mm, great.
And I wrote the screenplay of Rachel Forever. It's the story of a young girl from the state of Washington, Olympia, Washington, and she gets involved in the peace movement, goes over to Gaza to protest the destruction of the homes by the Israeli military. And she sees a lot of the atrocities that are going on in Palestine. And there was a bulldozer that was headed towards a house where she had been staying at this doctor, and she stood in front of the bulldozer, and it pushed a bunch of dirt over her legs, and she tried to get out, but she couldn't because she couldn't move her legs, but the dirt was up to her, past her ankles, and the bulldozer just kept going, ran her over. Everybody screamed at the dozer. The dozer then backs up with the blade still down, you know, smothering poor Rachel. They got her and they put her in the ambulance, and within minutes she took her last breath. Her parents had, were trying to immortalize her. They were trying to continue her efforts to bring peace in the Middle East, and they created the Rachel Corrie Foundation for Peace. They're also people in England that had a play. It was called My Name is Rachel Corrie, and it was a big success over in London. They tried to make that, they bring the play over in New York. They were scheduled to play it. It was canceled before it ever was shown from public pressure of Israeli or pro-Israeli groups. Mm-hmm. The family ended up suing in an Israeli court for the death of their daughter, and a lot of good evidence was brought forth in that trial, such as the driver of the bulldozer said he was ordered to run her over, a lot of really other good evidence. But of course the fix was in, and the government was found not guilty, that she was in a war zone, even though the Israeli government could not come up with a single document declaring that Gaza is a war. You know, here you got an area where there is no army, there's no navy, there's nothing. It's just constant bombardment, but from the Israeli military. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she was found. The Israeli government was found not negligent, and it was Rachel's fault for being into a war zone.
Hmm.
So it's a very emotional, compelling movie that we're going to be producing. We've got a production company in Iran that has signed on to it. We're going to be shooting in the state of Washington, along with in southern Lebanon, and it's going to be a very well funded movie. So it'll be a really big production, and I think this will make a big impact.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, you know, it's not the first time Israelis have killed Americans and gotten away with it. And of course, you got to think about 9/11 and the stories of the Israeli art students, the dancing Israelis, the Israelis we arrested and then quietly snuck back to Israel like a week later. So, you know, it just seems as though when you add that up, you toss in the USS Liberty, it's almost as though the Israelis have more rights in America than Americans do.
Yeah, it would seem to be that way.
Mm, and I know part of the fracas going on in Gaza now was, you know, that one Palestinian-American boy that was killed. But, of course, Obama really didn't make any kind of issue or case out of it.
Right, yeah.
So they really have free rein to just, you know, hit anybody they want anywhere on earth with impunity.
Yeah, well, when you control a nation's media, you really control the government. And, they're able to get away with those kind of things.
Mm, yeah, and well, look at the genocide that they're getting away with right now, even though the entire world is screaming against it. America still stays quiet.
Yeah, you know, those poor people in Gaza, I mean, they can't, it's just a prison. They're not allowed to go anywhere. Rafah is the town where Rachel was killed. It's right on the border of Egypt and Israel. But it once was a one town. And if you look on the other side of the fence, you know, you see all this beautiful landscaping, palm trees and other trees, and you know, it's a vibrant city. But on the Israeli side, it's desolate. It's, you know, blown out buildings and bulldozed buildings. And
you mean on the Gazan side?
Yeah, you know, they're not allowed to work. It's just like they breed these people, let these people breed inside of this area just so they can come in and kill them every once in a while.
Well, they call it mowing the lawn. That was one of the expressions I read in the news this week, that every now and then they have to mow the lawn.
Yeah,
I mean, what kind of people are these? What kind of animals are they?
Yeah, you know, that's what they consider that the Palestinians to be is something. Yeah, nothing more than weeds growing up, next to them. And so, yeah, it's a really sad situation there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, good luck with that film, and of course, I want to be one of the first ones to see it.
Yeah, thank you.
So since 9/11, you found quite a few little interesting things that tie in a lot of other interesting stories, like Sandy Hook, like the Columbine shootings, Bohemian Grove. And I think you've hit on quite the commonality with all these places. And I'm like, wow, nobody can say art's been sitting on his hands doing nothing lately.
Well, you know, what I did is I found on the Swiss 9/11 Truth site, they were talking about a ley line, and I didn't know much about ley lines, and it was a ley line that was between Stonehenge and Coquilco. Coquilco is an ancient human sacrificial site in Mexico. It was thousands of years old. It predates the Aztecs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big circle, and just like up in Stonehenge, it's a circle, and where they probably sacrificed people. And if you go from the center of Stonehenge to the center of Coquilco, it goes right over the top of the Sandy Hook Elementary School, and it actually goes over the center of a circle that's inside of the courtyard in Sandy Hook.
Hmm.
You know, and I didn't believe it, you know, so I had to go to Google Earth and check it out myself, and it's like, wow, you know, not only go over the school, but it goes over that circle. So it leads me to believe that that there may have been some child sacrifices that were going on at Sandy Hook, you know, because there was a story about the purple van where some children were inside of it and they left the scene and perhaps they were kidnapped and sacrificed later at Sandy Hook. I don't know. But I was looking in Google Earth and I was going over some areas of Fort Jay, which is on an island just south of Manhattan. And I noticed that there was this fort, and they had, typically in forts, you have four corners, and the corners are called ravelins, and this is where they put the cannons in the forts to protect the, whatever they're trying to protect, the areas protecting mm-hmm. there. And, but this fort has this one put on the north side, and I thought, well, that's unusual. It didn't serve any kind of purpose, any kind of military defensive purpose. And, so I thought, well, where does that ravelin point to? And so I went from the center of the fort through the tip of that ravelin, and it went in exactly 5,000 cubits. Cubit is 18 inches. Mm-hmm. Exactly 5,000 cubits from the center of the fort was the World Trade Center, was the Twin Towers.
Hmm.
Wow, that's interesting. And then I found out that there was another fort, Fort Independence in Boston. It was a four-cornered fort, and it had been torn down and it had made into a five-cornered one, you know, with a pentagon.
Right.
And so I went from the center of that, I went to the north tip of the Ravelin, and then it took me to the Boston Logan Airport, and it took me to runway 4R and also runway 11, or was it 13? These are the runways that were used supposedly for the flight from 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and went right there, and I thought, wow, that's interesting.
Right.
And I wanted to see what other events happened on 9/11 throughout history, because those Ravelins were put in, I think it was Dearborn, I think his name was. He was the Secretary of War back in 1820.
Hmm.
And, you know, because the whole country, the United States, was founded by Freemasons, and they have their own religion, and they believe in ley lines, and they believe in certain gematria, you know, certain numbers that they associate with different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I went way back and found out that on September 11th in 1847, there was an attack of Freemason that had attacked a castle in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this castle had been used for the area in the castle had been used thousands of years ago for human sacrifices. And when the Freemasons had attacked, it was General Wilford Scott. He attacked the castle. And after he took it over, he immediately hung 30 people that he had been marching around Mexico with. And then he also, six Mexican boys that were there at this castle, because the castle was being used as a little military college, they ended up with their chests split open. Like their hearts were cut out. And they made up the story that these boys were didn't want to get picked up by the Americans, so they all stabbed themselves in the chest. And these became the Los Niños heroes. And they set up a monument at the bottom of this cliff where they used to do human sacrifices. And this, at this Chapultepec Castle, there was also, besides General Scott, there was George Pickett, James Longstreet, Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Ulysses Grant. So there was a lot of high level Masons that you know ended up becoming generals later on in the Civil War. that were also involved in the sacrifice of these boys. So if you go from that point where they set up this octagon with an obelisk on top for the Los Niños heroes, and you go to that, to the point in Boston where the runways intersect on the Boston Logan Airport, that line goes directly through the center of the World Trade Center, and it also goes directly in the center of the Pentagon.
Hmm. How interesting.
So I had to look up, well, who determined where the Pentagon was going to be? Well, it was an architect that they had hired, and he was a 32nd degree Freemason. Mm-hmm. He's the one that decided exactly where the Pentagon was. Now, who decided where the World Trade Center was going to be? Well, that was the Rockefeller brothers, David and Nelson. Mm-hmm. And David, on an interview, he said, well, yeah, some people jokingly refer the Twin Towers as David and Nelson. Because they're the ones that said that they had to go to that exact spot. There were buildings already there.
Right.
And but they said, oh, no, we got to tear these buildings down to build up these Twin Towers. And, you know, with the power that they had, you know, Nelson being the governor and David being the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, they were able to use eminent domain to take all that property to build their Twin Towers. Now, being a, you know, working in construction, you know, when you see things lining up perfectly, you know that there's a plan for that. You know, when the houses are built 20 foot set back from the street, you know that mm-hmm. there's some kind of planning involved. All these houses are all the same. And then the same thing with this, you know, when you have all these sites that have been involved in some kind of human sacrifices and they're all perfectly on the same line, you know that has to be planned in advance.
Well, what do you say to people when you talk about this and they say, well, couldn't it just be a coincidence? Are you stretching this? What do you say?
Well, it's not that the line is like close to the Pentagon or, you know, close to the World Trade Center. I mean, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. You go perfectly from perfectly from the center of that obelisk in Mexico City to the airport. It runs right through the buildings of the world, the Twin Towers. And it goes right through the center of the Pentagon. It's a perfectly straight line. And the odds of that being a coincidence are like trillions to one. It's very, very, very slim. But, you know, then I found out other things about, I'll just go through the numbers in the World Trade Center. The Pentagon. The Pentagon has five sides, of course. It has five concentric rings from outside to inside, and it is five stories above ground. That's five times five times five. And in the occult, five means, the number five represents death. And if you have five times five times five, it's supposed to be the perfect death. So the number 125, which is five cubed, is very important in Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. Now, the word the Pentagon in Gematria, what you do is you take the letter A is 1, the letter B is 2, C is 3, on, and you take the words and you assign a number to it. And you can go to online and to a Gematria calendar, a calculator, Gematria calculator, and type in the Pentagon and see what the number value is. Well, the number value is 125, which is 5 cubed. 5 times 5 times 5 is what the Pentagon is. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to sacrifice a number of people inside of the Pentagon, well, how many people do you think they would want to sacrifice?
I would think at least 125.
Yeah, and that's exactly how many people they said died inside the Pentagon, 125. And then the other numbers that are important to the Pentagon is the number 77. The number 77 is the number of ultimate power in Freemasonry.
All right.
Well, the Pentagon is 77 feet high. 77 feet above the ground is how this Pentagon was built. And it was built on the 77th West Meridian. Now, we're told that Flight 77 is the plane that ran into the Pentagon. Well, you know, we know that's not true, but there actually was a Flight 77 that was flying overhead. Mm-hmm. And this was videotaped, and we use it in the movie Operation Terror also, is the E-4D, the Doomsday plane that was flying over Washington, D.C. as the explosions were going off inside the Pentagon. And the through a Freedom of Information Act, we found out the call letters for the for that flight. It was Venus 77.
Hmm.
Now, Venus, it was flying in the morning, and Venus in the morning, according to the Romans, their name for Venus in the morning is Lucifer. So literally, the Doomsday plane that was flying overhead over Pentagon as the explosion went off, was Lucifer 77.
Hmm. Wow.
So, and, you know, so 77 and 5 go together because you have the ultimate power, which is 77, and you have death, which is 5. And so that's why all these numbers of, you know, 5, 125, and 77 all go together in the attack on the Pentagon. And it's similar to with all the other crash sites on 9/11, how the numbers went together.
Pretty fascinating, you know. In on the horoscope, the fifth house in the zodiac is also the house of children.
Mm.
So that's pretty interesting, especially when you think of Sandy Hook or you think of Columbine.
Uh huh. Yeah. So now on my other ley lines, I found out about from the 9/11 Swiss Truth website about the sacrifice they had in Brazil on Santa Maria, and this was I think it was exactly 6 months after the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, the previous Olympics in London,
mm-hmm.
where they had a fire themed ceremony. They killed over 200 college students at this bar. It was called the Kiss Nightclub. They only had one exit, and there was a fire that was started inside of the building, and then they locked the only exit they can get out of.
Mm-hmm.
Over 200 college kids had perished in this fire. And then you can go to, if anybody wants to go to these these videos, they're on the Operation Terror YouTube channel, and this one is called "Humans Schooled on the Human Sacrificial Ley Lines in Southwestern United States." But so anyway, those people were killed at that site. Well, if you take a straight line from the Church of Satan all the way down to the center of the nightclub, that the line goes directly over Coquilco, again, the site in Mexico City where human sacrifices were done thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see if there was any schools in the United States that was on that line. And I found quite a few really interesting schools. One of them looks like a giant owl from up above.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was the Lincoln Elementary School. The whole schools were turned to orient according to the ley line. And then also there was a school in San Francisco. It was the Thurgood Marshall School. You know, Thurgood Marshall was a Freemason. And that school is also oriented along the line. And the team for this school is called the Rising Phoenix.
Mm.
If you know anything about Freemasonry, you know that the Rising Phoenix is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. And then I was looking for schools from the Octagon Marker for the Los Niños Heroes in Mexico City and went to the Church of Satan. And the most interesting school I found was the Desert Mesa Elementary School. And it was... The street was running, the school is on, runs east-west, but the whole school was turned by about 45 degrees to run equal with the ley line. The ley line goes right through the center of the school's courtyard. And if you went to the southwest of the school, it goes right into that school that I said looked like an owl that was on the other ley line. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, I could see where, you know, the northeast, I mean, the northwest goes to the right to the Church of Satan, the northwest door. The southwest mm-hmm. door goes to Los Niños Monument. The south east one goes to Los Niños Monument. The southwest one goes to the southwestern school. It's actually called the southwestern school. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, well, where does the other one go? So I started following that line, and it ended up at the center of the Denver International Airport.
Oh, no surprise, which is like the most wicked place in the country.
Yeah, I didn't know much about this. You know, I had been there before, but I didn't know about all these murals in there with dead children and the gas mask and the burning cities and I found that, you know, there was a marker in there that was put in by Freemason. It was dedicated, the whole airport was dedicated by Freemasons. And so then I started following the line a little bit further, and it went right over Sedona. They're building a big, huge amphitheater in Sedona. It'll seat 6,000 people, you know, only 12,000 people in the city. And the line went right over where they're building this amphitheater. And you know about the people, they, you know, they believe there's mystical energy emitted from the city of Sedona.
Right.
And then I found there was a military base in near Denver, and this military base used to be a pentagram. The runways were shaped like a pentagram. You know, the runways on Denver International Airport are shaped like a swastika, and this one is shaped like a pentagram. But they're not there anymore. But there was this real Masonic baseball diamond, and it was oriented with the ley line. Went right over that diamond. Mm-hmm. And then I'm following the line a little bit further, and then it was going over a school. So I thought, well, that's just interesting. It was the school. And then the buildings of the school were also oriented with the ley line. And so I had to figure out, well, okay, well, what school is this? Well, it was Columbine High School. Hmm. And I thought, wow, okay, that can't be a coincidence. Okay, now where were these kids killed at Columbine? And I find out they were killed at the library, and the school where the line goes over went right through the center of the library.
Hmm.
So I had to look into more about the Columbine shooting, because I didn't know that much about it. Well, I found out that in 2007, they finally released the police report, and there were 101 witnesses that were there at the shooting, and they said that there were other people besides two boys with their brains blown out that were involved in the shooting. And they said that some of those people were Satanists. These were kids that used to go to the school, and they used to wear the black clothes, and they would get up in the middle of the cafeteria, and they would, you know, they would praise Satan. These people, those kids were foreseen. You know, they were ex-students, you know, they had already graduated. But they were there at Columbine during the shooting, and they were seen to be shooting at other children by these witnesses. And they were arrested, but they were all let go after the shooting. And they blamed the shooting just on the two kids with their brains blown out. So, you know, obviously that was a safe satanic ritual too, the Columbine shooting.
Well, and the other part is Art, a lot of these kids, when you do the investigation on them, were all on psychotropic drugs, which I would think would make them easier to be mind controlled, like Manchurian candidates.
Right, yeah. And not only were the patsies or the perpetrators of these events on these drugs, but there was one kid named Mark Taylor, and he wrote a book about about the Columbine shooting. He was there. He was a student at Columbine during the shooting. He wrote a book, and his book goes against the official story. Well, he was picked up, and they said, well, you need a mental evaluation because there's something wrong with you. You know, because he was warned not to write this book, and he did it anyway and published it. And so he was picked up and brought in for a mental evaluation at a psychic hospital. And they did so much to him. I don't know, you know, electric shock or drugs or whatever it was. He came out of there almost brain dead. You know, you can look on Google for Mark Taylor from Columbine and listen to his interviews, and he can hardly function anymore because they ruined his mind.
Hmm.
At, you know, doing these mental evaluations of him. Because in every one of these school shootings, you never end up with a competent school shooter that can stand trial afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
They're either dead or their mind, they're completely dead.
Right. Well, isn't that also typical of a false flag where, you know, the shooter always ends up dead one way or the other, like Boston?
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, because you don't want... You don't want a trial after a false flag event because in a trial, evidence comes out and evidence will be counter to the official story. I mean, it's just like 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when April Gallup tried to sue for the attack on the Pentagon, you know, because she ended up grabbing her child that was in the daycare and walking through the hole from the little tiny hole where they said an airplane went through and escaped. She ended up suing, and she was fined $15,000 by the judge, who just happened to be a first cousin of George W. Bush. It was Judge Walker, for bringing a frivolous lawsuit. But the one trial that did go through was for the so-called 20th hijacker, which was Zacharias Moussaoui.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to pin the blame of Moussaoui on that he was also involved in the 9/11 attacks. But a lot of really good information came out of that trial from the attorneys for Moussaoui. They asked for pictures of the crash site at the... in Shanksville, and so they got the official aerial photograph of Shanksville, and you can see, well, there's no airplane.
Right.
They were able to get they subpoenaed the telephone records of the people that were on Flight 93 that were calling in and then talking about the terrorists that were hijacking the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
See, up until that point, you know, those calls were made by the cell phones of the of the victims, and that was collaborated by the victim's family, because they saw the caller ID from the cell phones from their family members that were calling from the airplanes. So it was well known. Okay, well, those had to be cell phone calls. Well, the defense was looking at it and saying, well, you know, these calls were made up of over 30,000 feet. You can't make calls from over 30,000 feet, 2001 from
right.
an airplane. That's not possible. So they subpoenaed the record, the cell phone record. Well, they wouldn't give them the cell phone records. Instead, the FBI changed the story. They said, well, it wasn't cell phones. It was air phones. And therefore, AT&T and Sprint and everybody, they don't have records of those cell phone calls. But you still have all of the victim's family families who said, well, I saw the cell phone number. I saw their cell phone number on my caller ID. I know
right.
it was their cell phone. That's how I knew who it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now the official story is, no, they weren't cell phone calls. Those were calls from air phones. You know, so the Zacharias Moussaoui trial, just the little bit of evidence that they brought up, you know, proves that the official story is wrong. It's not possible.
Right. Well, I always say they call it a story because that's what it is, a story.
Yeah, and Moussaoui, he was convicted with a life sentence, but none of the convictions were related to 9/11 because they couldn't put that on him, and because he simply was not part of that plot. Some of the other things, you know, unrelated to sort of related to 9/11, you know, was the fact that in Massawi's phone book he had the phone number for Blackwater. He had the phone number for the individual who was supposedly beheaded in Baghdad by the terrorists, so supposedly. You know, so there's a lot of interesting things that come out in these trials, and so that's why it's so important in these false flag events not to have a trial, that your perpetrators either end up dead or brain dead, so that no evidence will be brought forth in a trial.
Right. Well, they've been doing that, let's face it, since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. We don't and Kennedy, and you could, the list goes on and on. Art, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about those ley lines and schools and whether or not parents need to be concerned where their kid is going to school. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. I'm speaking with Art Olivier. We're talking about Operation Terror. And Lord knows there's no lack of that going on in the world. If you're not familiar with the movie, you're not familiar with his work, get over to operationterror.com. I have a live link here. And as Art said, you can see all his videos on the ley lines on his site as well. Art, when you were tracing...
Yeah, they're actually on the Operation Terror YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. Do you have a link to your YouTube channel on your site?
No, I should do that, though.
Yes, you should. I have a link to my YouTube channel, which I don't even have time to really, you know, pile away any information on, but there's still plenty there. Before the break, you're talking about these ley lines. They run through Columbine. They run through Sandy Hook. And I'm sure you've tripped across many a schools in the United States that are on these ley lines. My thought while you were talking about it was, can we use that to predict their next school shooting?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have my kid going to that school. When I put out the schools in Southwest U.S. on human sacrificial ley lines video, there were people that stumbled upon the site that were that had gone to those schools and or were parents of people at that schools, and you know, most of them just thought it was, you know, quite a coincidence or freaky, but there was one mother who was very, very upset, and she was going to turn me into the authorities.
Wow.
For making terrorist threats, you know, which I thought was interesting, you know, so I thought, well, okay, well, that might be good, you know, might bring a little more exposure to these schools, you know, because, I really do believe that these schools are obviously in a danger zone. I mean, had somebody outed Columbine before the massacre, you know, that could have saved some lives there.
Right.
So, you know, nothing ever came out of that, but I guess the authorities weren't interested.
Mm-hmm.
But, I would think that those schools that are on the ley lines are in imminent danger.
All right. I guess maybe we should trace everything that's on one of those ley lines. You know, years ago I had interviewed another producer. His name's David Bay. I don't know if you're familiar with him. But I don't remember what the title of his movie was. I think it was something like Freemasons in America, where he showed, you know, all these ley lines, especially how Washington, D.C. was laid out.
Right.
And, you know, the position and, you know, of everything there, from the obelisk to, you know, the owl being incorporated in the street design. Of course, the pentagram. And how that connects to all these other places in other major cities. So when you look at, you know, and I know sometimes, believe it or not, a lot of my listeners get upset when I talk about Freemasons because they confuse it with their Uncle John, who might be a Mason. And, you know, hey, you know, my father was a Mason, you know, a cement layer, a bricklayer, whatever. They don't understand. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a political, religious, occult faction of people that, you know, let's face it, they thought they were creating a new age, building America.
Well, you know, and to be a Freemason, the first thing is you have to be religious. An atheist cannot be a Freemason. But you can be a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, a Satanist. You can be any religion there is, a Druid, or whatever it is, but you have to be religious. Mm-hmm. And when you go through the different degrees of Freemasonry, you have 33 degrees, and most people never get past the third degree of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. But when you go through there, you are sworn to secrecy by the retribution if you reveal the secrets is a horrible death. They specify how they will kill you as you go through each degree. It's a different way of killing you. It's very satanic in the way that it will kill you for revealing your secrets. Mm-hmm. But once you get past about the 18th degree of Freemasonry, then you discover what it's about. It's about Satanism. Mm-hmm. That Satan is really their god. And so that's, you know, whereas before the 18th level, you know, many of them are Christian.
Right. And regular guys, you know, regular guys that hang out at the Elks Club. We're not talking about that when you hit the 18th degree. And some people say there are degrees higher than the 33rd degree.
Mm.
So, you know, it's kind of similar to the Mormon Church. You know, as you climb the ladder and you get to go into the secret temple meetings, you come to find out that, you know, it's also Satan worship, because originally they called themselves the Luciferians.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of people don't know that. I'm not talking about the average Mormon on the street or the average Christian on the street. They have no clue what goes on, you know, at the higher levels of these houses of God. Okay.
Right. You know, and I think it's important that, you know, some people think that the Freemasons and the Satanists want to destroy Christianity, but I don't think so, because I think they need Christians. They need people that are good, that believe that people are good, and that when they do their terrible deeds, you know, the human sacrifices and stuff like this, that these good people would say, well, no, you know, that's just not possible. People are not that evil. And so I think that they need a separation of good and evil, and they need a lot of people to be naive and to believe in humanity, and that there could not be such a group of evil people that have controlled the world.
Well, I'm sure you saw that Kubrick film, Eyes Wide Shut, with Tom Cruise. And they basically just put it right out there. I mean, it was one of the scariest movies they'd ever seen. When you really, because you're watching it and you know it's real. You know, the inside rituals that go on. But I'm sure a lot of people, like you said, good people watch it and just think it's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they expose themselves all the time in plain sight. Sort of like on 9/11, I thought the movie In Plain Sight was one of the first ones. You know, they do this magic right in front of you because they know it's so unbelievable that you're not going to believe it. You know, look at Israel right now. You had a couple of Israeli diplomats. One of them, I saw a post yesterday, who said that if you want to, you know, defuse the Palestinians, tell them you're going to rape their mothers, okay? And that we should start raping the Palestinian women to get the Palestinian men to stop fighting. Another one was a young woman who said that all the mothers of the snakes should also be killed. You know, here you have live people, real people in the news making these kind of statements. So how can people doubt what you're saying about, you know, what goes on in the Freemasons, what goes on at the top echelon of, say, the Mormons? You know, there's so many different religions, basically, you know, built on fantasy, a lot of money, and Satan.
Yeah. You know, and you talk about in your face. I mean, have you seen the images, what they call the images of the devil that was in the smoke of the World Trade Center?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were showing this. They have photographs of it. They have. It was on CNN.
Oh yeah.
you know, I imagine, you know, that it was, you know, Photoshop, but this is what they were showing the world. Mm-hmm. They were showing, it was a picture of Ahriman. You know, he's the all destroying Satan, the source of evil in all the world.
Right.
And, you know, that was his face that was in the smoke of the World Trade Center that they were showing the whole world.
Right. Look at the 2012 Olympics and all the Satanism and human sacrifice and flames and demons that were all over that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That was in the video there about the sacrificing. You know, they're showing a sacrifice of this woman to the rising phoenix.
Right.
And there was so much occult, you know, that the Olympics are completely dominated by that.
All right. So let me ask you this, Art. What are you going to do with all this information? Are you going to put it all together in another movie?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's the thing about making really controversial movies is that it's very difficult to get distribution on something like that. I am finally working on a distribution deal for Operation Terror, but it's very difficult. And without distribution, you don't have any sales, and without sales, you don't have any money coming in. Without any money, you can't make new movies.
Right.
So that's very difficult. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you know, I just have my YouTube videos out there for free that anybody can go on there and check them out for free.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rachel Forever movie, Rachel Corrie movie that we're making, that's really going to be, a first rate movie, a very, very high production. We're looking at a 7-figure budget to production of this movie.
Great. Well, keep me posted and let me know how things are going so I can get you back on the show and help you promote it.
Yeah.
Well, Art, thanks so much for joining me today. This was like a very quick hour. I was like, I blinked and the hour's gone. Thank you so much, and absolutely stay in touch.
All right, thank you, and have everybody go to OperationTerror.com.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Art Olivier. Check out Operation Terror because it is to 9/11 what executive action is to the Kennedy assassination. And I can't say that enough times. Anyway, tomorrow, Blood and Guts with myself and my co-host, good friend Jack Blood. You're going to want to stay tuned. And I want to thank you for supporting the show, because as you can see from most of the guests I have on this show, it's very, very difficult to get the support when you're putting out truth and anything that'll make people think. Because we live in a world of illusion, and unfortunately it's an ugly, lied-filled, propaganda, mind-controlled-filled illusion. But it doesn't have to stay that way. Anyway, thanks so much. I'll see you guys tomorrow.